Banner. To
fight. Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Captain.
Isn't there a white knight upon a fiery steed? Late at night, I toss and I turn and I dream of what I need.
I'm always angry.
For a hero, right? It's been 6 years since y'all seen this t-shirt. I know it has been because I've only ever worn it three times, and well, it was once when we did the artwork that you see on the screen right now. And when you see that artwork, I know there are a few people thinking, please tell me he's not going to do it again. Because you remember the last time we came here, before we were done, the baptistry was transformed into the Batcave. Superman swung from the speaker. Spider-Man climbed up the front of the podium, and from the back to the front, there was nothing. And look, our comic book store exploded in here. And y'all probably wondered, I think we might have really hired somebody that's crazy. And you're probably wondering, not again. Well, I got good news for you. This ain't that sermon series. This is not that. You see, in that sermon series, we followed the life of Elijah, who truly was God's hero. He was a man that did so much with so little. He stood one of Israel's darkest times, and he stood there and he preached the word of God, even at his own risk. Not that he was perfect. He had his kryptonite moments when he wanted to run. As a matter of fact, if you read the stories, he even quit a couple times. Just told God, I give up. But in the end, Elijah, well, he did what a hero was supposed to do. He stood there and he stood for his country. He stood for his time and he preached God's word. Now, the study that we're about to do is the exact opposite of that. You see, this is about another man in the Bible. And it's about the idea of missed opportunities. Elijah had a tremendous life, but this life, well, it is just going to be all about the idea of wasted potential. The fact that he just never could get out of his own way. We're going to talk about a man who was definitely given great power, but never learned the idea that with that comes a great responsibility. We're going to look at a man that when you get to the end of his life, you're just going to say, what a waste. And as I give you that introduction, you might want to know, why on earth would we do a study like this? What do we hope to gain out of studying a life like that? Well, I had a youth minister, and I've made this quote several times, that said, knowledge is the ability to learn from one's own mistakes. Wisdom is the ability to learn from somebody else's. So the idea here is we want to look at this life and we want to gain some wisdom. We want to learn what was wrong with his life that so impacted his ability to do what God put out there for him to do, that it so made him go the way that he did, so that maybe I can take some things out of his lesson and apply them to my life and about how I go about doing the things that God has given me to do. And maybe from that, we can all just grow a little wiser in how we approach our Christian life. Now, understand, Samson is the life we're going to be studying. So if you have your copy of God's Word, you can start turning the pages. If not, there's one in the pew rack right in front of you. You can turn to Judges chapter 13, and I promise you I will catch up there in just a little bit, because I kind of got to catch you up on the story. And while you're going to Judges 13, I'm going to start in Judges chapter 2. And I got the wrong reference up there. This is Judges chapter 2, verse 1. And this is what it says. It says, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. And the key word that I want you to get out of that, I put it in bright red so you could not miss it. It is the word again. Because this is not just a one-time thing. This is something that plagued Israel all the way through the book of Judges. In fact, the book of Judges is nothing more than a downward spiral for the nation of Israel. They just keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and they would rebel against God, and then God would send them a hero, and then they would recommit themselves to God, and they were okay for a while until the hero was gone, and then they went back, not right back where they were. They actually got a little worse, and they just kept going and going and going because they're lacking leadership because Joshua is gone. Judges chapter 2, verses 8 and 9 says, "Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash." So you understand, Joshua, the man that looked at the land and said, "We can take it." Well, Joshua, there's giants in the land. I don't care. We can take the land. We can do the impossible, because God said that man is gone. He died. I mean, he served them for 110 years, but he is gone, and now they're heroless. They're leaderless. And, well, people's attitudes began to change toward God. This is what it says in verses 10 and 12. "After a whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors," so we're only one generation removed from the mighty man of Joshua being there, "another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and they served Baals, and they forsook the Lord God of their ancestors who brought them out of Egypt, and they followed and worshipped various gods of the people around them." One generation removed from Joshua. And it sounds more like 20th century America, doesn't it? I mean, people's attitudes have changed. And notice, they didn't stop worshiping God. They just started worshiping lots of different things in their life. They started going here and there. And it says they forgot the stories, the great stories of Moses and the mighty man Joshua. They just became myths that are in a history book. And they were just one of those things my parents told me as a bedtime story. And they don't really have any meaning, because their attitude toward God is, "Hey, look, yeah, sure, you meant something to my parents, but this is my life. This is my time. And I'm not sure there's a place for you, God, in my life." And so what began to happen is the nation became very inconsistent in the way that they worshiped God. I mean, yeah, they were there sometimes, and sometimes they weren't. And when it was good for them, God was good for them. But when things were going tough, then, well, they went looking. They went shopping. And as I said, I'm not sure whether I'm describing early Israel or 20th century America. The environments aren't much different. And God's people, well, you think maybe somewhere there's a little shining light. No, they're living in rebellion also. As a matter of fact, the funny thing about the verses I read to you is you couldn't tell much different between God's people and the rest of the nations around them. You could not go into Israel and see much difference between what God's people were doing and what all the other nations were doing, because they were trying to make themselves look like all the other nations around them. They began to just look at themselves as here they are. And so as we arrive in the story of Samson, we're going to be in chapter 13, and well, Judges has 21 chapters in it, so it's just simple math. We're just a little bit past the midway point in Israel's history. And well, just as a side note, these people, they were living in captivity under the Philistines. So we're in one of those downward bottom cycles of the up and down roller coaster ride of Judges. We're coming down the hill, and Israel's almost to her low point. And so God is going to raise up a hero. Well, he's going to raise up something. We're going to take a look at what he raised up. And I hate to tell you this, whenever you start thinking about raising something up and you're talking about people, you have to start here. You have to start with the parents. Because I think if you look at the parents of Samson, maybe it explains something about how Samson got where he was. You see, we're going to look at it, and it's going to be a certain man. His name was Manoah. And we're going to talk about a story from a barren woman. Well, this is a story we hear quite often in the Bible. It's a woman that was unable to have children. And when we read through their story, you're going to get the idea that maybe they're a little bit older. You know, they're maybe a little bit past their child-rearing years. They're not the people that you would usually pick to give a young man to. You know, maybe they don't have as much energy as they used to have. But they're just not with the typical parents that you would see. And you get the idea that they were religious people, because as we read their story, we're going to find out they prayed and they even worshiped. But you also get the idea that when you read through their story, that they were not overly committed people. After all, an angel came and looked at them, and they didn't even realize what it was. They had to kind of guess. And they finally realized it, and you know what? Instead of praising God, it made them afraid. So you just get the idea that maybe the root of Samson's problem began with the fact that the parents struggled with some of the issues that the nation was struggling with. But in spite of the parents' struggles, we're going to get a very promising start about Samson, because he is going to be a promised birth from God. So an angel's going to show up, and the angel's going to say, hey, guess what? You're going to get pregnant, and you're going to have a son. And that son is going to be great. But just so you know, that son that's going to be great, that son's going to come with some expectations. And so as we go to Judges chapter 13, I told you I'd get there. Judges chapter 13, verses 2 through 7. I want to read through the expectations, and then we'll come back and break them down. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah, from the clan of the Danites, had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, you are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, that you do not eat anything unclean. That you will be unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is to never be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Then the woman went to her husband and told him, a man of God came to me and he looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name, but he said to me, you will become pregnant and have a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite of God from the womb until the day of his death. So we've got three human beings involved in this, and I want to look at the expectations that was given to each human being, because I think it explains a lot about why we struggle so much in the world that we live. Let's start with mom, because mom got some expectations. Mom was to drink no wine, and we can add other fermented drink to that. So she was supposed to be alcohol free. Okay? And not only was she supposed to be alcohol free, she was supposed to eat no unclean food. And that doesn't mean that she didn't wash her food before. Beforehand, now she's got to wash her food before she eats it. Remember, we're dealing in a Jewish society, and the Jews had a very strict dietary plan. And you weren't allowed to eat this, and you weren't allowed to eat that, and bacon was definitely a no-no, and there were just things that you weren't allowed to do. I know, Dean, that's terrible, isn't it? Why would God create a menu with no bacon? I don't get that. But the way this worked, they had all these things. So I want you to catch something that we usually miss by the fact that the angel had to remind her that she could not eat unclean food while she was pregnant. Why do you think he had to remind her of that? Because she was already probably eating it now. So she herself was already ignoring the commitments that were put out there by God himself. Don't eat certain foods. So she wasn't taking her relationship very seriously. But here's the good news. She only had to do this for 9 months. You know, when Samson was born, she could go back to the life that she'd always. She could go back to the wine, and she could go back to the fermented drink, and she could go back to eating whatever she felt like. And so she only had to keep it up for 9 months to get this promise that God had given her. So I guess I've never been pregnant. Don't ever plan on being pregnant, just so you know that. And I've never given birth, but I guess that's a small price to pay. No alcohol and only a certain kind of diet for 9 months. I guess that's a small price to pay if you've been praying to have a son all of your life. Now, what about Dad? Well, as usual happens in pregnancy, Dad got off easy. Notice there are no expectations listed for him. Okay, as a matter of fact, the angel didn't ever really come talk to him until after he expressed a little disbelief that his wife maybe had been maybe dipping a little too deep into the wine and didn't understand why she was saying this. So then the angel had to come back and make sure Dad was on board. But even then, he wasn't given any expectations. And I have to wonder why. I mean, why wouldn't you give this man some expectations? You're about to entrust him with God's hero. Why on earth would you not do this? And I just wonder, what would be the point? I mean, here he was, and it doesn't even say that he has any kind of a religious background. It was mom that was actually looking for the son. Dad was just out doing what Dad was doing. So that's two, but we're going to have a third person that's going to get involved. And, well, we know his name. His name is Samson. And the angel tells mom, Samson is to be a Nazarite. Now, I don't want you to confuse this with the term Nazarene. Jesus was not a Nazarite. By the way, do you know that's why we usually get the paintings of Jesus with long hair? Is because somebody during translation mistook the term Nazarene and Nazarite. And Nazarites all have long hair, so the assumption was that Jesus must have had long hair. So it's not the person that's coming from the town of Nazarene. A Nazarite was something very special, and it was put out in Numbers chapter 6 as to what the requirements for a Nazarite were. So you can stay there in Judges chapter 13. I'm going to run through these requirements just so you understand who we're dealing with when we say the word Samson. And the first thing we get is we get no, and notice I put the word wine in quotes. We usually say Samson can't drink wine. I want to read the requirement to you because this is a big requirement. They being the person that takes the Nazarite vow, must abstain from wine and other fermented drinks. That sounds a lot like mom. And must not drink vinegar made from wine or other fermented drink. They must not drink grape juice or eat grapes or raisins as long as they remain under the Nazarite vow. They must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, not even the seeds or the skins. Wow. He couldn't even take communion because that's grape juice. I mean, what a restrictive lifestyle, especially if you're living in Israel, which they have vineyards everywhere. I mean, wine was kind of like served, it's like we do water. It was served at every meal. I mean, wine was there constantly. And to look at a person and say, you're going to go and you can't have any of it. And by the way, not only can you not have the unfermented stuff, you can't even go get the Welch's stuff off the daggone shelf. You can't have any of it. You can't have any of the sun-dried raisins. Oh, I'd be so heartbroken. Tell me I couldn't have a raisin. I love raisins. You can't have grapes. As a matter of fact, if somebody gets the seed off of it, you can't even have the seed if it got dropped into a recipe. You can't have any of it. That's a big deal. And then he's told that, well, no haircuts. Now, I know some gentlemen that probably would appreciate this rule, but I want you to pay really close attention to the rule. Numbers chapter 6, verse 5. during the entire period of their Nazirite vow, no razor may be used on their head. They must be holy until the period of their dedication to the Lord is over. They must let their hair grow long. So, kind of your hairstyle is already decided for you. I mean, you can't go to the barber. You know, maybe you were allowed to maybe snip those dry ends off of the, you know, when it starts to split. Maybe he was allowed. It does say no razor, so I guess maybe you could do a little trim here and there. But for his entire life to deal with that, you know, we've seen the Tangled and Rapunzel where she has the big long thing and how cumbersome it was for her to live her life with this long train of hair behind her. Could you imagine? And every time the summer days get hot, and he's kind of like sweating to death, and he's trying to out there play football with all the other guys, and they're running laps around him because he's got all the weight from the hair behind him, and then he's got the idea of the heat, and that's got to be terrible. I mean, I don't have a lot of hair to worry about anymore, but I never was a big fan of long hair on myself because, you know what, it's hot. And he's got to deal with this. And every time he looks in the mirror, it's a constant reminder of this life that he's kind of been saddled with. No contact with dead things. Now, this, depending on how you want to interpret this, could be a very big deal. Because what it does mean is absolutely positively, if one of your relatives die, you can't go to the funeral. Wow. Funerals were big deals. As a matter of fact, that's put out here in Judges when you read through it. Judges said, through the period of the dedication of the Lord, the Nazirite must not go near a dead body. You couldn't even get close to the things. And depending on how you want to translate that, all meat technically is dead. So there is a good chance that when this is translated into real life, not only could he not eat raisins, and not only could he not eat grapes or have vinegar or juice, he might have had to be a vegetarian also. Okay, you could just like put me in a little box and ship me away now because that means no hamburgers, no steaks, no fish, no shrimp, no bacon. Okay, I have nothing left to eat. That's like most of my diet. And here is Samson that is going to have to live this way. And when I read those requirements, I hope something kept jumping out of it. Well, he only has to do it for as long as he's a Nazirite. You see, in verse 13 it says, now this is the law of the Nazirite when the period of their dedication is over. So usually this was a commitment that a person would make in their life, and it was for a period of time, like 6 months or 9 months or 6 weeks, because they were trying to dedicate themselves to the Lord for the purpose. You do understand, Samson, this was a lifelong thing. There was no over. It was never going to end. From the moment that he was born until the moment that he was supposed to die, Samson was supposed to live this way. Samson found his life living with expectations. We don't like that, do you? Do you like people to have expectations of you? You know, I have people at work that expect certain things from me, and sometimes they expect things from me that are not part of what I think is my job. And I don't mind telling them, you're in the wrong place. It's not part of my responsibility. You're not supposed to expect that. We don't like expectations, do we? I mean, it kind of limits us and sometimes puts some restrictions on what we can do. And, you know, my parents had expectations of me, and some of those worked out well, and some of them caused us to constantly fight. So, you know, expectations are hard things to live with. But I want to take those things that Samson had to live with, and I want to kind of refocus them and what it really meant, because I want you to take his expectations. I want you to see how they impact your expectations to live as a Christian. Oh, that makes us a little different, doesn't it? Because that wine thing, Samson was going to be asked to live a committed life in an uncommitted world. Remember the again? we were in it again where we were up and we were down and we were in and we were out, and sometimes we liked God and sometimes we didn't like God, and sometimes we sang praise and sometimes we went and worked with other gods, and we just wanted to live our life any way that we wanted to do it. Everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, and now Samson comes along, and from his birth he has to worry about living a totally committed life while everybody else around him is living their life any way they want to. Now, you've never struggled with that, have you? I have. I mean, you see people doing things, and you know what? They're getting away with it. It's okay for them. Why is it not okay for me? See, Samson was going to have to be asked to live the ultimate countercultural life. And remember that hair? Every single time he looked in the mirror, Samson was going to look different. I wonder how many bad hair day jokes he got in his lifetime. Come on, you know the kids did it. He came, maybe he's having one of those moments, and it was raining, and his hair is all droopy. You know somebody's going to say something. Or maybe it was one of those hot, arid, dry desert days, and it was all frizzy. Come on, you know the kids are going to pick on him. How many times did you think he had to deal with a bad hair joke? I mean, he could have been a great person for Prell. He could have done the commercial. But you know what? He had to live with this every day of his life. Every time he looked in the mirror, every time his dad rubbed him on the head, every time he ever sat down and that long hair would get caught underneath him, who knows what, but it was always there, just a constant reminder. Every time he got up in the morning and it's got tangles in it, and mom's got to brush all those tangles out. Every time he blew a bubble in bubble gum, and you know what, he got bubble gum in it, and you're trying to get it out of the lawn. Everything he did, the hair impacted. Whether he ran or skipped or jumped or played track or swam, the hair was always a reminder. You're living a life that's not your own. You're living a life that's been committed to God. And he could never escape it. Can you imagine what it's like to live under that kind of pressure? Can you imagine? Living in a world where people, because you carry the name Christian, expect you to look a little different, expect you to be a little different. And you're always living under the microscope and you're like in a fishbowl where people are just waiting for you to make the mistake. And the pressure just kind of builds up around you. I can relate to this idea. Not through the long hair. Not ever going to happen for me again, I'm happy to tell you. I tell my barber he should give me a discount haircut. He tells me he does, but then he charges me a finder's fee. So, you know, that's the way it works. But he's got this hair because he's going to look different. God is trying to do an object lesson here. And when it comes to the dead things, Samson was going to be asked to act different. I mean, the wine thing knocks out most of the parties, does it not? Matt, no hunting. Because if you shoot it, you can't go get it. Because you can't get near the dead thing. Matt's like, don't know about that one. No killing whatsoever. So the good news is he had a really good excuse not to be in the military. See, the original idea was for Samson to be a different kind of leader. The original idea wasn't for Samson to be this mighty man that came in and fought a battle. The idea was for him to be a different kind of leader. A different kind of hero. The only problem is that living with expectations is hard, isn't it? I mean, isn't it? Don't you ever get tired of it? I do. You ever get tired of those moments where you're just tired of always having to make the right choice? Always having to be the good example. Always having to be the... All of the bad influences. All of the world that just seems to be so totally messed up. All of that. Samson was going to have to do it too. And he was going to have to do it. And at the same time, be God's hero. And I want to tell you something. I'll go ahead and spoiler alert. It didn't go so well for him. Now, it didn't go so well, but there is a high point. High point in Samson's life. It probably happened before he was a teenager. It's sad when you reach your high point before you're even 13, isn't it? This is what it says in chapter 13, verses 24 through 25. The woman gave birth to a boy. God kept his promise. He told her, going to have a son. She had a son and named him Samson. He grew. So here's the good news is he wasn't a little baby that had to have the long hair. He actually grew. He grew up and he became bigger and stronger and faster and unfortunately maybe a little meaner But he had what you would probably call as normal a life as you could have. He grew, and the Lord blessed him. So as we're starting out the story, that as he's growing up, the blessing of God was upon him. And so at some point in his life, it sounds like Samson had some kind of a relationship with God. Some kind of a part where they were communing together, and where he talked to God, and where God gave him what he's supposed to be doing, and God gave him some kind of a plan. And it says God blessed his life, and it says the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. That's an important verse because it's personal. He can actually feel God. It's almost like, Luke, use the force, Luke. You know, it stirs within him. And well, while he was in Manoah, Dan, between Zoah and Ashtal. And again, I guess the sad point is, that's the high point. The entire rest of his life is one giant what if. What if he decided to become the hero? What if he didn't do this? What if he didn't do that? What if he made this choice differently? What if he had done this differently? What if he hadn't have gotten involved with this girl? What if he had listened to his parents when they said do this? It was all one big giant what if. I'm going to tell you something. This is a little personal, but you know what? That's my biggest fear. Someday when this life is over and I'm planted in the ground and they got the tombstone over me that has my birth date and my death date, and there's somebody standing there, that they're just going to say, what if? What else could Barry have done if he had committed his life to God the way he said he was going to do it? What if? You know, I have that same fear for this church. At some point, somebody's going to ride by and look up the little church on the hill and they're going to say, what if? What if they had done more with what God had given them? What if they had chosen to be the hero? What if they had taken their commitment a little more seriously? I have it for the people sitting here in the pews listening today. I constantly wonder, what if? What if you had taken what God has given you and you put 100% of the effort into it? What would it look like? How much different could it be? If we chose to be the hero God asked us to be, and not merely the heroes that we've become.